Welcome! This is the podcast of Care Austria with Andrea Barstorff-Hager.
Today my guest is Dr. Alice Meissner. Hi, Alice. Thanks.
Hi, Andrea. Hi.
Alice is born in Hong Kong. She grew up in London, Hamburg and Sydney and studied law in Hamburg and Vienna. Hearing the news from Hong Kong that reached us here in Europe, how do you feel?
Well, it's for me personally, it's a bit of heartbreaking for both sides, in many ways, actually. The last time I visited Hong Kong was October 2019, in the midst of the demonstrations. And I tried to be open and listen to all different players and different... There are no winners in this whole tension and the demonstrations debate, basically. And there are a lot of anti-police voices, but also on side of the police forces, there are lots of victims. Mm-hmm. Because one of my friends, they even do a fundraising for families of Hong Kong police officers because their kids and their wives had to suffer a lot of mobbing. Mm-hmm. because of the fact they're police, that they are police or wives or children of police officers. So there are no real winners here. And somehow a deadlock. Due to the pandemic and due to what everything happened, we have now a bit of a peace situation here. And I understand also the government of China is doing efforts to build and the Greater Bay Area. I'm not sure whether you're familiar with the Greater Bay Area.
Maybe you explain it for our listeners.
Yes, the Greater Bay Area is the connection between Hong Kong, Shenzhen and Guangdong, and between eight cities, even including Macau. And it will be a huge market area and connecting all the people, market players and companies, and also in the arbitration world. There are a lot, I just recently did some research for another project. A lot of arbitration institutions have been established due to this Greater Bay Area plan. One of the purposes is to strengthen the arbitration and dispute resolution between those players and also for foreign investors. So that's kind of a hub. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's kind of a new widening hub. And within this hub, there is Hong Kong, but basically it's embedded in this larger hub, how do you say? And it's another plan or an ambitious plan where Hong Kong business people also look forward to.
So could you explain our listeners a little bit how you came to this field of interest, which sounds rather special to me, also as a lawyer?
Yes, well, that's quite a long story, actually. I cut it short, okay? When I finished my study, I already was very interested in international arbitration, of course, also with, as I explained, with the Chinese cultural point of view, that you have to do arbitration when dealing with Chinese investors. And then when as a young student, just after the bar exam, I was working on this project in Hamburg, Chinese European Arbitration Center, for a law firm who actually initiated this project. Then I stayed in this field doing corporate litigation for another law firm, Freshfields, and was eager to gain experience with business commercial arbitration cases. It's a very competitive field, I have to say. So then I came to Vienna and I actually focused my area of expertise more on the Chinese investment side. So I helped building up China desk within large law firms. And now having my own law firm since 2021 beginning, my core focus is back on arbitration.
And you know that CARE has a strong focus on working with women and girls. So maybe you could share a little bit with us. You have your roots in Hong Kong, but you were educated and you grew up in European or Australian context. So are there differences? Did you notice them Is it good to be a woman, no yes. matter where? There what are, would you say?
Basically, as a woman nowadays, but it's easier than our past generation, so a former generation. So even in China, if you look at the very, very successful women and in Hong Kong, you can find a lot of them. Basically, and they're totally my role model. And in China, you would not expect sometimes that a Chinese lady would lead the company and would be the person who builds up the company, brings the IPO, that's the initial public offering, so go to the stock market and get the company listed, get even more, receive even more praise and success for her work. But that's definitely the case. And it's sometimes maybe to my business partners here in Germany and in Austria, so in the Western world, it's a surprise for them if I introduce them my client who's a lady. And there is a term for it, it's a dragon lady, we call. And you see that a lot in China.
So you're talking about large businesses or also about smaller business
mm-hmm. which grew like into large business.
Okay. And sometimes so it's possible for a Chinese woman to become really a business tycoon in Hong Kong.
Yes, totally.
You're talking about this level, I assume.
Yes, mm-hmm. totally.
And not so much about the women who work in textile factories and things like that. So this is the entrepreneur woman, I assume.
Yes.
That also with the possibilities that China offers, mm-hmm. It is also an exception because not all men become business tycoons. This is very difficult.
Correct.
So what about the normal daily working life of average Chinese women working in factories or in shops? Or is it different? What would you say? Or is it quite the same?
In China, you have more the land and city mm-hmm. deviation. So basically, there is a, we call it in German, Schere, so a scissor mm-hmm. society. So in the land region countryside, you have, of course, a lot of poverty where the women also do lower jobs. But men and women, are the same nowadays, mm-hmm. poorly off. So if you see that in the documentaries that parents go abroad, go to the cities, leaving their kids with the mm-hmm. grannies, both will go mm-hmm. go abroad.
Not
and work.
Only the men.
And okay. Not only the men okay. nowadays, also mm-hmm. the women. And in terms of day-to-day business, it's still a generation gap, so you still get not the same respect as a feedback from older men. I think it's mm-hmm. a bit of the same as in our culture. But I have the understanding or the experience that if you are working as on a professional level, it's even easier. The society makes it easier for women to climb the ladder than sometimes in our conservative societies, maybe in one or two countries in Europe. So because the society is not as tight and as structured. In the professional world in China, everything is moving so fast, it's developing so fast, the business develops so fast, industries develop so fast, the mentalities develop so fast and so quickly. And they leave room for women and they're more freely to express themselves. And of course, childcare is not an issue because if you have a little money, you can employ 3 or 4 babysitters, which we cannot afford here.
That's a big difference.
So that's when I mm-hmm. met in Hong Kong, one of the lawyers, event. I met the whole team of Hong Kong Stock Exchange legal team, and the whole team were women. And even the head of Hong Kong Stock Exchange General Counsel is a woman. The head of Hutchison, which is Drei here, so the whole group, it's owned by a tycoon called Mr. Lee, but his right hand side is a woman, the general counsel, and I really adore her. So lots of women figures rather in the Chinese business world. I experience even sometimes more than here.
And is the public also debating the fact that more women are successful than 50 years ago? Because I have always the impression that in Europe it is still a very strong debate sometimes, also in the media. And if you look at our politicians, they are also sometimes somehow even astonished about equality, that this should be something normal, that we should not have the need to talk about every day. So is that different in Hong Kong, would you say? Is it more normal or is it...
It's more normal. When Carrie Lam, for example, came into office, no one debated, okay, there is a woman coming into the office.
She's the governor of Hong Kong,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
This was nothing special. Like here we had a Bundeskanzlerin for a few months and this was sensational.
Yes.
This is what I mean.
Yes,
And this is still, this still shows me that we are far away from, this is normal.
I understand that other Asian countries and societies may be different, like in Japan, for example, where the role models are still very structured and very still like conservative. But for Hong Kong and China, like the, I can only speak for the major Chinese cities because I have no experience on the countryside. It's not as a surprise. It's rather a common phenomenon that you see like a Chinese lady owning the business, being the boss, being the real boss sometimes if it's a wife of a husband and the husband goes back and says, oh, I don't want to deal with this business anymore.
And also but having the power over the money.
Yes, definitely.
So we see it also in other Asian states, like in Bangladesh, you have head of state, female head of state. We have many politicians in Asia. If you think about Myanmar, it's not such a good example.
It's not a good example.
So it's not necessarily that if a woman is in a high position, then everything is better. But would you say that it helps other women and young women? Because you said many of these business ladies were your role models. So how important are role models? What would you say in general, not for arbitrators in special?
Okay. But in general, role models are definitely very, very important, I think. And Andrea, you're also a role model for many, many and for me as well. So basically, I think female role models are a must for younger girls. And if we see around us in the world, and in particular now Afghanistan, which shocked us all, and where CARE is so active, this is really a step back into, I don't know, mid-century. So it's a really a bad thing. I have a young girl myself, a six-year-old, and I told her it is not, you cannot take it as granted that girls go to school after that. I told her because it's, sometimes she says she does not want to stand up in the morning. I said, it's not every girl can go to school.
Absolutely. And this is one of the strong focuses of CARE because I'm often asked when we say that we have a strong focus on women and girls also in emergency work, like in Afghanistan, where everything is overlapping at the moment. You have different layers of catastrophes overlapping. I'm very often asked, so you don't help the men and boys? Of course we do. What a question. The only thing that CARE is saying that we put women and girls as a so-called special group in the center of our work, because otherwise, in many ways, they are overseen. They don't have access to neither medical services nor food nutrition services. So it is important to enable the other half of society also to participate equally. And this is why it is so impressive to talk to people who have experience in various cultural settings of living and being brought up and also have a broader view on things simply because you are able to understand the culture in Hong Kong and in southern China and maybe also in northern China, but China is like a continent. And you also understand culture here. And it is not a given that we are always the advanced ones. This was one of my earliest learnings when I started traveling in general. And this is one of the interesting things that you learn when you work in a global organization like CARE, that in spite of our conviction that we might be in many ways advanced, you learn very quickly that there are other societies who have different solutions who also work well. And I see that the work of CARE and also this conversation contributes to it is focused not on knowing everything better, but bringing the best ideas globally together to enable progress and alleviate the situation of poor and suffering people, which unfortunately is increasing due to this global pandemic that really tortures all of us. Mm-hmm. So We have had many opportunities in the podcast to talk about the impact that it had on the work of care and still is having. The need for humanitarian aid has never been larger than now. It is growing every year, not only due to Afghanistan, also due to Syria. And how did it affect you personally in your professional field, but also as a person?
Yes. Well, basically, I'm sitting in the same boat as we all. So the digitalization has caught us all up with us. We're having calls all the time, online video calls and everything. But I'm rather a practical person. So I think I'm the luckiest one or one of the luckiest people, you know, having so less impact of the pandemic. If I see and I talk to business partners, they have large impacts on their supply chain, not being able to send over their teams, being very frustrated where they want to do an investment, they cannot come over to have a look at it, but they have me, for example, then they call me up whether I can, you know, talk to them. So the need for a good, trusted partner is much higher right now for the Chinese business people or businesses or investors. On the other hand, of course, I have customers who tell me, oh, we cannot continue with this or that project and we cannot, you know, continue. So it's no more work on that project for me. So, but it's a, so on one side, I have larger demand. Foreign investors, Chinese investors contacting me for that very reason. They cannot come. They do not want to come due to a quarantine if they have to face when they go back.
So your role increased?
Yes.
The demand is increasing even?
Yes, basically right now, yes, I can say so. Because it's much easier to have me, if they trust me, to deal with it or and recommend them some other teams than coming over and building a whole new team. But of course, we have also fallback, as I said, some projects delayed or just never happened or realized.
Let's talk a little bit because you are a lawyer and CARE is a global, non-political and non-religious humanitarian organization. We are also a large global player. And it is quite interesting that I know I have been working now for CARE for more than 10 years, and I know that CARE globally has explored from time to time the possibilities maybe to open an office also in China, which is, of course, considered an interesting, could be an interesting partner and fundraising market because there are many wealthy people and also wealthy women, as we heard now. But I don't dare to say we never succeeded. We never did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we never were, close enough to say, okay, it takes this and that. And then maybe we were missing a good arbitrator who could have helped us to open doors and also to really guide us. Yeah. So what is the situation? And I know, of course, that some large global NGO brands are working in China, like big other ones like CARE, but CARE is not. What is your impression of, is there a sector of NGOs? Is such, because in Europe we talk about a sector of big players who are partners of the European Union, like we are, and of the local governments. And we are a real sector, a socio-economic sector. Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there something like that in China? Is it evolving? Mm-hmm. Maybe in Hong Kong especially?
Yeah, well, what I experience personally, and I'm not an expert, so this may not be objective, but there is a large interaction and a strong interaction between intergovernmental organizations and those we call NGOs under our understanding, or even only private persons. So basically, I think we spoke about ESCAP. So ESCAP is an under organization of the UN. It's the Economic and Social Commission of Asia and Pacific. ESCAP is officially an intergovernmental organization, but it's actually the works are all on voluntary basis. So private business partners and business men and women, They spend their time voluntary, they spend their travel fees, they invest a lot of energy and money by themselves, and they organize projects for all sort of kinds, like helping smaller business to prosper, giving them projects, how to get them projects in fintech, in waste management, all that kind of
globally,
fields.
Not only in China.
No, for Asia and, okay. and Pacific, okay. including China.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So including China. And for example, there is also a dialogue between ASEAN and China. So there are lots of forums. For example, I took part in World Economic Summit, China Economic Summit. So there is always kind of a linkage between intergovernmental units, persons, and the local NGOs. So the local NGOs, they're not as standalones that you would have here. For example, CARE is totally responsible and very successful and does a lot of events by themselves, for example. That's rather not, I don't experience that much. It's like it's being part of something. And the Chinese, the Chinese general average person would also tend to donate to somehow governed entity. Let's say not, it should not be the government itself, but somehow connected or somehow supervised, because there is a huge suspicion in China if a private organization goes around and says, I'm collecting money for this and that project. Sadly to say, there is a very, very large dominant history of misusage in that area.
That not only applies to China, this also is very true for here. And it is the right of the donor, of the person who gives, to know what happens to the money. And this is why in Austria and in Europe, and also in North America, but let's talk about Europe, we have to fulfill a variety of obligations and laws to really rate as a trusted organization. So in Austria alone, we have this Österreichische Spendegütesiegel. But in addition to that, when you work with the European Union, like CARE Austria is mainly doing, you have to fulfill loads of regulations and audits and examinations. This is really, really tough to qualify as an approved partner who is allowed to implement projects worldwide. And I think this has to happen because we have to standardize also the approach of global aid and work, and it provides a certain security to all the stakeholders involved that their money is used in a transparent and targeted way, really to help the people who need it and not to leave all the money in the administration of the organization. Talking about that, this is a question that I'm very often asked, depending on the year. In Austria, our administrative cost is between 5-8% per year, depending on the total volume, and all the rest goes to the dedicated humanitarian projects, of course. So this is also, it's interesting because as a European, you often have this idea that China wants to control everything, and in African countries, corruption is, it is there and it's a lot there, but you can still work and there are still existing some regulations that are rather useful.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it helps a lot. And this is a special role that you have beside your arbitration profession, also to show other people a bit of other realities.
Yes. Well, one of our partners, or it was a friend more or less, but a former client, who's the think tank in Bangladesh, IPEC, and by Professor, set up by Professor Said Munir, Khasru. He is a very inspiring person, and Andrea, I'm very glad that you're also doing with him a joint project. And there are as he himself and some others, they are still like individuals setting up large think tanks, are very eager and successful in, let's say, in the Asian region. I cannot say for the Chinese region in particular, but for example, Southern Asia, there are lots of well-known think tanks. So probably they call themselves not an NGO, probably more think tank. I don't know. I'm not.
No, they call themselves a think tank.
Yeah, a lot of them, yes.
And Care Austria is working together with them. And this is also quite a new experience for us on publishing an SDG report. We talk about the Sustainable Development Goals. They are midterm now. The evaluation, it's high time for it because we are in the middle of the whole process. And what was new and what was the beauty for me of the SDGs is that they apply to all of us. We are not talking about the so-called poor countries that are there and that are existing and that need support and help. No doubt about that. But they include also the so-called industrialized countries because what we see that the gap between poor and rich or the middle income is getting wider also in our industrialized rich countries. So I know that many governments are a bit overseeing the fact that the SDGs also apply to them. And I'm really wondering and I'm waiting for what also the European Union will do in that regard. So I think that what we are doing now together as CARE with an Asian think tank is again a change of perspective. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to this publication because I think it will be welcomed because not so many people are dealing with it. What we are seeing now is that due to COVID, all the SDGs, nearly all of them, are deteriorating. This is also what the United Nations published last year in their SDG report. Yeah, this is noted. This is seen by some specialists, the NGOs. So what to do. And I think it is very important not only to complain, and this was also our debate when we had our last meeting with the colleagues in Bangladesh, not only to say, okay, everything is getting worse, what can we do? Mm-hmm. And this report that will come out probably this October will have clear recommendations from Focus on Asia, but it will deal worldwide with this issue, what we could do as a global civil society. And I think maybe this could also be a good contribution from your side, also to spread the word about this report, which will deal with Asia, yes, but not exclusively.
Definitely. It's a very, very good project indeed. Since we are, as you said, globally, this pandemic brings us even closer, even we cannot see each other, but basically we have all the same problem that we have to face and eventually there's sustainability problems as well. So basically, we are a global family.
We should be a global family,
we
and we should remind ourselves that the good sides of the globalization, we can't go back.
Well, from the sustainability side if you look at it, it's sometimes not really efficient to, you know, get some products from overseas if you can get it from here. Mm-hmm. I think there are very ambitious people behind them, behind some projects that I've heard of, that they have to show now the CO2 emission percentage, or there is a rate on each product. I think this is a good way to deal with the problem. How can we save energy and limit the resources? But in terms of global projects, we have to be aware and we should stay and keep focused that these are global problems. We'd have to find more dialogue in terms of finding solutions. So dialogue is definitely a must, and that's what we all should avoid, that the tensions also between East and West, whatever, wherever they may, that they should be resolved in a dialogue. So since we have so many problems that we can only deal with as a global family, right, as
absolutely
CARE always emphasizes it.
Absolutely, especially when it comes to the environmental issue, which is the last topic that I want to touch base with you, because I read a lot of things that China is quite innovative in this sector on one hand. On the other hand, when we remember the outcomes of Glasgow, It was a bit disappointing because many countries claimed that if the large ones are not participating right from the beginning, it is all useless. So how does this fit together? What is your impression?
From technical point of view, they're so advanced. They look for strategies here with other brains that are here in Europe and globally. And also near Wuhan, there is this new project getting a total city being CO2 neutral. Mm-hmm. This is very ambitious.
And millions, a city of million inhabitants. This makes it even more impressive.
In Asia, so Asian people tend to find always be practical solutions, practical, and not think about how it should be done, but how can we do it? How shall we do it now? What's the immediate goal that we can reach? I think that's more the perspective they share, and to saying that what should we in theory do in general.
Mm-hmm. I think that's also out of the daily need, right? Because even when I was in Beijing years ago, the air was really unbreathable.
Yes.
I mean, I think they really have to act faster. In Delhi, they did a lot of things, not so much only out of green motivation, motivation, but out of the need to act because it's so polluted.
But that's why the electric cars are, you know, coming now from China. Yeah. If I may add on that,
mm-hmm.
because the Chinese government wisely invested really. In early days, from our perspective, already in the early days, in programs for car manufacturers producing and innovating new electric car models or techniques, getting the batteries even more efficient. So clients of mine, like Geely, or I have contacts who knew the battery packed, all mm-hmm. those, you know, they benefited from the subsidies or tax benefits. A lot of programs were there. When we here in Germany, Austria, and Western, even, I don't know, US, but we were talking about the hybrid technology, and there were like large hybrid hypes, mm-hmm. let's say mm-hmm. that way. And they were already saying, oh no, we'd go for total electric. Mm-hmm. So they have an overproduction in electric cars, mm-hmm. and we're sitting on hybrid cars, mm-hmm.
which are not
believe,
so green as they pretend to
yes,
be.
Yes, correct,
but this would be another interesting conversation. So we see that many things are going on, that Asia for sure is one of the main continents of the future. I mean, there is India, there is China, there are parts of Russia. So we see that there is a lot of things to learn and to do. But what I take away from this podcast, the basis of everything and also the solution to everything has to be based on conversation and on mutual opinion exchange, not necessarily always having the same opinion, but finding peaceful solutions. And this is also in the main interest, not only of CARE, but of the civil global society. And institutions like CARE work for the benefit of those people who are often left behind mm-hmm. in all those fast and dynamic developments that you described so well from China. So I thank you very much for this conversation, and I want to close with a personal question, if you allow me. My entry point to China many years ago was also a long visit in Hong Kong. And what I saw there and what really impressed me was the practice of feng shui.
Yes, I love feng shui.
You love feng shui. I was impressed, but I never used it here. And I'm interested, but I'm not a believer. Let's put it like that. So I know that it plays a big role in business there and in private homes, and people really look at feng shui and it helps them, and it's an integrative part of their life, daily life. It's not like here when you think, where should I put my mirror? This is normal in Hong Kong. That's what I saw, at least. So I may ask you about the zodiacs. These are also very well known. And we are starting very soon the year of the tiger, right?
I think, yes, when this podcast was will be podcasted, it's already then probably Tiger Year already.
And
yes.
This sounds for European ears, this sounds very promising, the Year of the Tiger.
Yes, definitely, it is promising.
Give us a short outlook. Do you think it will be a promising year?
Well, I'm not so much into it, but I'm still a believer of Feng Shui. And in the zodiac, the braveness of the tiger is very prominent. So it's definitely a zodiac sign for yang, yin and yang, or also forces which are used in Feng Shui. So for yang stands for action. So, and totally, and tiger even for dominance. So basically, it's a good year, for example, for Care to start any new projects in Asia with its strengths for, it stands, tiger stands for strength. So go with the strength and go with the dominance and the success and everything what a tiger represents, actually the glorious braveness. So in that sense, I wish Care with the Asian strategy all the best in light of the tiger, and it gets all the goodness out of this tiger zodiac sign.
Thank you. And we also wish you, Alice, and for all your plans, also the strength of a tiger. And we wish for the tigers of the world that they are well protected, because apart from the zodiac, they need a lot of protection too.
Yes, correct.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for being our guest. Thank you.
Thank you.